Debates are fun to listen to, at least I think so, especially when it's once every 4 years between two candidates who've decided they have what it takes to run the United States of America. Sometimes a debate can be equally as entertaining or informative if it's between two or more people vying to sit on a city council or run a state as the governor. Debates, though, don't always have to be political. Which is a better ice cream flavor? There's a debate. What would happen if two randomly selected NFL teams met on a Sunday afternoon? There's a debate. But a debate is exactly what people in the United States have been having since the mid-1960s over a crime that took just a few seconds, described perhaps as the biggest whodunit in U.S. history. I'm Eric Bushman. This is the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. The question over who killed President Kennedy is actually not up for debate, according to the United States government. They handled that in 1964 when the findings of the Warren Commission were made public. Lee Harvey Oswald did it. Then Congress reopened it in the 1970s, and they said, well, Lee Harvey Oswald did it, but he had some help, and there was most likely a shot that came from the front that missed. When I began this project, I did not intend on taking a side, and I still believe that's the best thing to do for me. I don't want to sway anyone. I've learned in my professional life as a journalist that you shouldn't do that. I'm not going to say who I vote for, and I'm not going to say what I think happened on Elm Street when it comes to Lee Harvey Oswald or shots from the front or cover-ups, whatever. I just report what these folks have told me over the years. However, I don't have a problem giving my thoughts on a few things. Within the conspiracy crowd, there are some really crazy, ridiculous theories that don't make any sense and would be impossible. Most likely, people just trying to sell a book or trying to get 15 minutes of fame. Even conspiracy believer Robert Groden agrees with that.
There are a couple of real wackos on both sides of the case, and we've got some of the worst on our side, sadly. People who claim that Lee Harvey Oswald's in the doorway of the depository, which he's not. You've got people claiming that shots came from the storm drain. You've got people claiming that the driver turned around and shot the president. You've got people claiming that the Zapruder film is a cartoon. Just all kinds of craziness. And from my way of thinking, it's no accident that they're doing this. These are the bad guys. They pretend to be on our side, but they're not. They just keep presenting false evidence that hurts us. The Zapruder film is the most important single piece of evidence we've got. So there are jerks out there that have come out and said, oh, the Zapruder film is a fake. It's a cartoon. It's been doctored. No, it hasn't. I've held the original film in my hand. I've worked with it several times through the years. That film is as genuine as any piece of film has ever been. But some people just gotta find conspiracies even when there aren't any. We don't need to fake the evidence. The real evidence is strong enough.
I will also say that while numerous investigations have concluded Lee Harvey Oswald killed President Kennedy, there are certainly parts of those investigations that leave a lot to be desired. Even former Sixth Floor Museum curator Gary Mack agreed with that.
After talking to so many people over the years, I think we'd all like to be satisfied as to what really did happen out there. There are theories about what really did happen, but there's no hard proof of anyone other than Lee Harvey Oswald, but there are indications there might be more to the story. I'd certainly like to know before it's my time to shuffle off.
The void left by JFK's death, though, may not just sit in the United States. His assassination had worldwide consequences, especially involving the war in Vietnam. Gary Mack.
People wonder what course this country would have taken if Kennedy had continued his presidency, whether U.S. participation in Southeast Asia would have increased or decreased. Publicly, Kennedy had been giving inconclusive signals about what his intents were. He gave a famous interview to Walter Cronkite, and he said one thing, and he gave another interview to David Brinkley of NBC and said something completely different, all in the space of a few weeks.
Staying on the subject, Robert Groden.
The Vietnam War never would have gone on, never would have existed the way it did. The path, the structure of the military-industrial intelligence complex would have been completely different. John Kennedy realized the dangers that we were under and was trying to do something about it. He just underestimated their power.
While many, if not most, in the national news media have been satisfied for years that the official investigations concluding Lee Harvey Oswald carried out the act alone, it took quite some time for some to be satisfied with that. Jim Lehrer, who at the time of the assassination worked for the Dallas Times-Herald and went on to work for PBS, chased conspiracy leads.
Oh, you bet. There are no Pulitzer Prizes to be won proving it was a lone gunman. So we were all working on the premise that it had to be a conspiracy.
He says at the time it simply did not seem plausible that one person could fire off three rounds in a few seconds and change the course of history.
I worked with the premise that there was a conspiracy. All I had to do was uncover it, and then my career would be made. And, of course, I also, once I moved on to covering politics and doing other things and went into television, I no longer followed the story as carefully. However, the interest was always there, and I always believed, bottom line is, I always believed that it was possible that someday in a newsroom, whatever newsroom I'm working in at a given moment, if they still had bells or whatever they have at that moment in time, there was going to be a story that was going to move somebody, you know, on their deathbed, was going to say, hey, by the way, before I die, I want to tell you, I was Oswald's driver, or I'm the guy who got Oswald the rifle, or I was, you know, in other words, that there was a conspiracy of some kind. And as we talk about this 50 years later, that story has yet to be written because it didn't happen.
Lehrer eventually came to his own conclusion that Oswald was guilty.
Most of the people I know who covered this seriously then and have remained alert to the story since have come pretty much where I have come, which is that nobody has ever shown me, at least, a piece of evidence that indicates it was anything, in any authoritative way, that it was anything other than this one guy, Lee Harvey Oswald, operating alone, fired those three shots and killed John F. Kennedy and changed the course of history.
One of Lehrer's examples was that someone might come forward claiming to have been Oswald's driver. Well, we know who drove Oswald to work the morning of the assassination. That's Buell Wesley Frazier. But he by no means had a clue what was to happen later on that day, even though initially the Dallas Police Department grilled him on whether he did have an idea. Frazier is not convinced his co-worker carried it out all by himself.
I still find it hard to believe today he would do something like that, since it's easy to blame something on a dead man because he can't defend himself. I think it would have been very interesting if he would have been able to go to trial. I think we'd have I learned a lot of things that America doesn't want to know.
Frazier, who knew Oswald for a few weeks leading up to the assassination, says the accused assassin written about in the history books and official investigations did not add up to the Lee Harvey Oswald he thinks he knew.
I don't think Lee did this all by himself. You stop and think about, back in 1963, then the security that is around someone like a president of the United States, you just can't pull something off by yourself. Now, I know that a lot of writers and a lot of people think that Lee Oswald was just some type of loose cannon, a nutcase. But I don't think that. And like I say, some people may agree with me. Some people may disagree with me. This is America. You can think whatever you like.
So your thought is either if Lee did it, he was working with others, or he had nothing to do with it?
Yes. I think if he did it, he had help. Because it's just too much ifs and ands and buts to fall into place.
The investigators, though, they were confident about it.
Are you confident that Lee Harvey Oswald did kill the president?
Absolutely. 100%. The government told the truth in 1963. They just didn't tell the whole truth.
Former FBI agent Jim Hostie, who interrogated Lee Harvey Oswald in the aftermath of the assassination, has believed a benign cover-up did exist, but for national security reasons. In the months following the assassination, it was decided that Hostie would be better off continuing to serve the FBI, but not in Dallas. He was sent to the office in Kansas City.
Everybody thinks I was given a disciplinary transfer up here. I wasn't. Both the SAC down in Dallas and the SAC in Kansas City insisted to me that I was being sent here to keep me away from people like you. I was forbidden under all sorts of restrictions not to talk.
Did they think you might talk, or did you want to talk anyway? Was that a...
Well, I wanted... when they made all these accusations about me not telling the police, not being cooperative, and blowing up the office and things like that, I mean, I wanted to say, well, this isn't true, and they didn't want to even let me do that. And if you try to avoid the press and refuse to answer, that's accepted as an admission of guilt, isn't it? So I had to stand and take the guilty plea, and so they moved me up here to get me away from the press.
Eventually, though, Hostie wanted his story out. If anything, to clear his name and defend himself, when in fact all he did was follow orders.
I regret that I followed orders from Shanklin and destroyed the note. It would have shown it was nothing but a lot of what I call guff.
Hostie calls it a classic J. Edgar Hoover move. You do what you're told, then you take the heat for it. As long as those above you are okay. A side note, the Dallas field office today is named the J. Gordon Shanklin FBI building. Hostie wrote a book once he was out of the Bureau. The book, Assignment Oswald, was something he wanted to do years before he was able to.
For my children, and my fellow agents wanted me to do it, too. I decided to do it, I think, about the first day I was in Kansas City. I want to tell the public what, of course, I was restricted even then. And there's a lot of things I didn't know. Through the years, different things have come out. And when they came out, I said, oh, that's why this happened.
Hostie was extremely proud about not being the only member of his family to serve in the FBI. He talked about his grandson, who at the time of the interview was an FBI agent in Atlanta. Jim Hostie and I spoke in November 2010. He died just 7 months after that. Jim Hostie was 86 years old.
It made me infamous, not famous, but infamous. And of course, I also enjoyed history, but I didn't want to be part of it.
The legacy of the men and women who were witnesses to history and even a part of it will live on. Dallas Police Detective Jim Lavelle has defended his department's investigation at every opportunity. He was never fond of conspiracy believers.
These conspiracy buffs, they come up with all kinds of theories and one thing or another. But like I told him, I said, you haven't really brought up one yet that I can't knock in the head if you want to get right down to it. So, there you have it.
Detective Lavelle passed away in 2019, just days after his 99th birthday. His granddaughter, who produced a documentary about Lavelle and Dallas police actions and the assassination aftermath, wrote a moving tribute to her grandfather on social media. Hostie and Lavelle aren't the only ones who are no longer here to repeat their stories. Ambulance driver Aubrey Reich and Dr. Robert McClellan at Parkland Hospital are no longer with us. James Tagg, whose testimony led to the single bullet theory, has also passed. And on the single bullet theory, Dr. Cyril Wecht, a staunch critic of that theory, was actually friends with the man who came up with the theory. Arlen Specter, who went on to be a U.S. senator from Pennsylvania, was friends with Wecht, who spent his career as a medical examiner and forensic pathologist in the same state. Specter was, in 1964, a lawyer working for the Warren Commission. Specter came up with the single bullet theory, and he called it the single bullet conclusion. Dr. Wecht says, in a time of such division in the United States, we should be able to disagree and still get along.
I had been involved in a lot of politics when I was younger. I ran for the U.S. Senate as a Democratic nominee in 1982, and I was coroner for 20 years and county commissioner for 4 years in Pittsburgh, Allegheny County. So it's easier said than done. But I do believe that we need some civility in politics at all levels, and particularly at the national level and in the Senate and the House of Representatives. And especially in the Senate, where you've got 100 people in that powerful position, there has to be some sense of collegiality, some sense of camaraderie. You can differ in political philosophy, ideology. And by the way, that's the way it used to be. When you had some people like Senator Robert Taft, who was a very conservative Republican from Ohio, and you had liberal Democratic senators, but you did not have behavior such as we are witnessing today. So I would hope that maybe that can be accomplished.
Wecht continues touring the country, still arguing against that controversial theory in the official government conclusion. Also still providing a different theory from what the investigators said is Robert Groden. If it's a nice weekend in Dealey Plaza, he might be set up on the grassy knoll, talking with people and selling his life's work. He has, however, changed something he used to say frequently.
For years I've been saying, may all the truth be known. Soon. Now I'm saying, may all the truth be known now.
Groden's actions in the 70s allowed for another official evaluation of the evidence. And to him, that's still not enough.
When I showed the film on Goodnight America, people realized, hey, there really was a conspiracy, and it made all the difference in the world. And the absolute impossibility of getting the case reopened was no longer an impossibility. We did get it open, and it was the Zapruder film that did it. That's why I get so angry at the morons who keep saying that the Zapruder film is a fake. They know it's not. They don't know an F-stop from a bus stop photographically. They just don't know. I would like to see the case reopened again, not behind closed doors as it's always been before, but in the open where people can the real serious researchers in the case can have an input there. And there aren't that many of us left.
Bill Newman, who along with his wife and two sons were the closest people to the Kennedy limousine at the time of the fatal headshot, has repeated his story for years. First to the Dallas news media, then investigators, and then countless others.
People want to hear what we have to say, but most of the historians like yourself know verbatim what we're going to say. They just want to hear it from us. But it does stand out in my mind. Things slowed down. At first there was a lot of people contacting us for the first 10 years or so, and it sort of died off. But about the 23rd anniversary, coming up towards the 25th, we start hearing from people all over the world, and it hasn't let up.
Secret Service agent Clint Hill, who jumped onto the back of the limousine during the shooting, didn't talk for years. He, along with fellow agent and Kennedy detail author Gerald Blaine, eventually opened up not too long ago, and Hill himself has written books, Mrs. Kennedy and Me among them. Former Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings recently wrapped up two terms as mayor. The 50th anniversary of the assassination wasn't his only trying moment. When a patient infected with Ebola showed up at a Dallas hospital in 2014, Mayor Rawlings had to tell residents to go about their daily routine without panic. And he also led the city when Dallas again went through absolute shock when a gunman opened fire on police officers in 2016, killing four Dallas police officers and an officer with Dallas Area Rapid Transit. Of all those who seemed to wish more than anyone else they had never been a part of this was Buell Frazier. It seems all he did that morning was take his co-worker, Lee Harvey Oswald, to work.
I wish the assassination of the President of the United States had never happened. If I could go back and change anything in my life, that'd be one thing. I wouldn't have been within 1,000 miles of Dallas that day. Because a lot of the things that I've experienced since then hasn't been good for me. And I didn't do anything wrong.
Frazier rarely talks about this subject. The thing, though, he absolutely loves to discuss, if you're curious, and this is with anyone, baseball. Dallas Times-Herald reporter Jim Lehrer left his mark on the assassination. It's a part of a permanent memorial to President Kennedy near Dealey Plaza.
There is that memorial, the open tomb memorial of Philip Johnson's. There's a tablet on the ground that explains what it is, a tribute on behalf of the American people. I wrote that anonymously in 1970. And,
not anonymous anymore.
Not anonymous anymore, and because one of the members of the Kennedy family who came demanded to know who it was, and I had made a deal with the guy who was the chairman that nobody would ever be told, because he and I wanted those words to always appear as if they came from the people of Dallas. There was no individual who was tied to them as the author, but we were forced to. I felt obligated, and so did he, when it was Stephen Smith, who was a brother-in-law of President Kennedy, came. And he was very touched by it, and he wanted to know who wrote it, and really was pretty strong about it, so we agreed to tell him.
Lear's career afterward took him to PBS, and prior to his retirement from doing so, he's the journalist who has moderated more presidential debates than anyone else.
The Kennedy assassination kind of began the seriousness and importance of television news to everybody, and as a journalist, it changed everybody, all of us, everybody who was around then, and particularly those of us who worked on that story, were all touched permanently with this kind of, oh my God, if they can kill the President of the United States just down the street from where I am, anything could happen. And I think, to answer your question directly, that in my head and that in my kind of soul has made me a, quote, better journalist than I would have been otherwise, more sensitive than I would have been otherwise, and probably has affected whatever success I've had since.
Jim Lear died in early 2020. He was 85 years old. Gary Mack, former longtime curator of the Sixth Floor Museum, actually started his assassination career with many questions. He was known to be a conspiracy theorist, who then ended up at the museum and sort of turned to backing the official version that Lee Oswald did it, but it was obvious Mack still had a lot of questions, even though the museum, for the most part, stays out of conspiracies. During one interview, I wondered if he was ever going to be able to let it go. Some assassination researchers over the years joke that they've been able to quit bad habits, but they could never walk away from the assassination.
What do you hope to see from the museum, and even after the longtime curator Gary Mack is gone, what do you hope that the museum will
You mean
do
I have continue? To I have to retire?
Someday, I think, right.
I just hope our collection, which is tens of thousands of items now, I just hope our collection can answer some questions in the future. There are things that you won't find in any book on the Kennedy assassination, but the 6-4 Museum has the answer. A woman came by just the other day, literally, who was the daughter of a woman who was in Dealey Plaza, and she turns up in some of the films and photographs, and researchers have always thought she was one person, when in fact it turns out she was a totally different woman. Little things like that get answered. So we hope people will at least pick up the phone and call the museum and donate their materials to us for preservation and access for future study. We're a nonprofit, of course.
Gary Mack died in 2015, barely 2 years after the 50th anniversary. The Sixth Floor Museum held a memorial for Mack in the old Book Depository building. Gary Mack was only 68 years old. Over the course of time, the debate has not much changed. The argument of a possible shooter from the front was not brand new when the Zapruder film made its television debut. Books came out against the Warren Commission immediately. However, I think one of the best statements on your opinion versus mine versus his or hers came in the 1960s, from the only person shot that weekend during the assassination who survived. Texas Governor John Connally spoke to reporters in the aftermath of the Warren Commission findings release and offered something so simple, yet so profound.
No one, no matter how clairvoyant or how wise, could ever say with finality that would satisfy everybody in this world precisely what happened. And I think we ought to quit trying to attempt to do so, because I think it's an impossible task, and I don't care what kind of a body you constituted. I think you'd have a problem of them taking uncertain things, of them making interpretations and evaluations of their own and forming a conclusion which might or might not agree with the Warren Commission, and then where would you be? You'd just have somebody else's opinion.
I leave you now with this, an excerpt from my favorite speech President Kennedy made. Not his inaugural, not even one of the speeches talking about going to the moon. His desire for peace, while at the time pushing for a test ban treaty with the Soviet Union. This came just months before he would die. He gave a commencement address at American University, where he said,
"Let us not be blind to our differences, but let us also direct attention to our common interests and the means by which those differences can be resolved. And if we cannot end now our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity. For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal.
I'm Eric Bushman. This is the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas.